views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now? And who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine. Now, here is your host, Dr. Susan Allison.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to We Carry the Light. And we are at a new time, 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern. So good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are. I am Dr. Susan, and I am so happy that you are here today. And speaking of being happy, I read an interesting debate in Psychology Today talking about which creates the most lasting fulfillment, being happy or having a purpose. And I ask, is being happy connected to having a purpose, which is what I think, but what do you think? I know that I am happiest in the present moment when really connecting with someone I love or when in nature and taking in, for instance, I live by the ocean, taking in the ocean at sunset or even the first blossoms on the fruit trees in my yard, which is happening now and it's gorgeous. I can feel happy by the simplest things, like seeing a hummingbird out my bedroom window getting nectar from a lemon blossom, which is also happening right now. When I can be in the moment and really take in the beauty and in a loving feeling, a memory or a message from my daughter or my son, I feel content. I feel a calmness and I feel a confidence that all is well. And yes, life can be challenging too. In the midst of enjoying a summer day, your husband or wife can die, as my husband did in 2013. So how do you still feel the joy, the beauty, experience the good around us when something so heartbreaking happens? This is a question I have for today's guest, who is Rick Hansen, author of Hardwiring Happiness, the New Brain Science of Contentment, Calm, and Confidence. Dr. Rick Hansen is a neuropsychologist, a senior fellow of the Greater Good Science Center at UC Berkeley, and a New York Times best-selling author. His books include Hardwiring Happiness, Buddha's Brain, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. Founder of the Wellspring Institute for Neuroscience and Contemplative Wisdom, he's been an invited speaker at Oxford, Stanford, and Harvard, and taught in meditation centers worldwide. He has several audio programs, and his free Just One Thing newsletter has over 100,000 subscribers. Wow. Rick was my guest on another show in 2012, which I really enjoyed, talking about his book, Buddha's Brain. It's a pleasure to have him on my new show today. Hi, Rick. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here for me, too. Just visualizing that hummingbird made me happy.
Isn't that interesting? And I've been that way since a child. I just am so connected to nature, and I find that present moment in nature, for me, lights me up. You know, just makes my heart sing. So, yep. So I always like to start with my guests' personal life, because it makes you so much more accessible to listeners. And I'm wondering if you could say a bit about your childhood and about what happened in college that really started helping you take in the good.
Well, thank you. So let's see, I was born in 1952, so I'm 62 and a half years old. I grew up basically in suburban Southern California. I was the first of three kids, kind of a quiet, observant, nerdy kind of guy, who from a very, very young age, probably in my earliest memories, you know, barely three or maybe even not quite three, a few other memories, you know, from preschool time. In the background of my awareness, you know, in the situations I was remembering, was this kind of poignant, clear, haunted sense that people were creating creating a lot of unnecessary unhappiness. The kids around me, my family, my parents, you know, adults in general and so forth. And I had a longing in me, kind of in the background, but very real in the mind of this little kid, kind of woven into the wallpaper of the mind of that little boy, was this longing to figure out how to step out of so much of that unnecessary unhappiness and step into, true lasting happiness and inner peace. So that kind of set me on my journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my family, loving, decent parents, and certainly also, you know, a reasonable, situation I grew up in, kind of lower middle class. But my parents were both, while loving and decent, very poor at empathy. They had a hard time really tuning into the inner being of the other person and understanding their impact on the other person. So the normal diet every child needs of attunement, mirroring, what are sometimes called narcissistic supplies, healthy narcissistic supplies of prizing and cherishing and feeling really seen, were kind of a thin soup for me. Mm-hmm. And then compounding that issue, when I landed in school, I was very young for grade. I have a really late birthday, and I skipped a grade as well. So I was a very, you know, young, dorky kid who experienced a lot of rejection and exclusion. And there, too, in my peers, the normal diet every social mammal like us, human beings, really, really needs, especially as a kid, to be included and wanted and seen and valued and so forth, again, was for me a very thin soup. So it wasn't horrible, but it gradually had effects. And by the time I, you know, went off to college at 16, it felt like I had a big hole in my heart. And then a very interesting thing happened, which I draw upon, as you know, in the beginning of my book, Hardwiring Happiness, which is that, you know, I was unhappy. I had a deep longing inside for what had been missing for me. And I, you know, let my longings be my teacher, which I think is a very important thing for us, to let your longings be your teacher, not push them away or set them aside. So what I did was that I started noticing that if I recognized the actual facts in which I was being given what I longed for, which is to say ordinary experiences of being included, wanted, liked, joked with, befriended, a girl would smile at me, oh my goodness, in the elevator, things like that. If I would notice those facts and then not just be intellectual about them, you know, not just notice them, but actually feel something, let myself feel liked or included or appreciated or seen or wanted, right? Feel something, and then especially if I didn't just brush off the experience, but in fact stayed with it, savored it, took it into myself, kind of marinated in it for, you know, 5, 10, 20 seconds at a time, no big deal, but really letting it sink in, an amazing thing began to happen, which is that I started to feel that bit by bit, drop by drop, brick by brick, I was filling that hole in my heart. And any single moment wasn't transformational, but the gradual accumulation as the weeks and months went by made an enormous difference for me. And then, maybe to finish on this point, I learned probably 20, 30 years later as a neuropsychologist what I'd been doing. I'd been actually changing my brain, you know, a dozen seconds at a time to hardwire into my brain the key experiences and the growing inner strength of feeling cared about that my heart really needed.
Wonderful. I so appreciate you sharing those personal memories because I think they help all of us see that whatever has happened, you know, it's very important no matter what it is. And it was like the breadcrumbs or the little seeds that led to your discovering this concept of hardwiring happiness. So when did that actually happen? Of course, the seeds began much earlier. But when did you actually discover this concept, do you feel?
I actually, in my early 20s, I started realizing that there was this missing piece, because I got very involved in the human potential movement in college, UCLA, in the early 70s, and then I got involved in Eastern spirituality and meditation, again, mid-70s, and then through the 70s, the whole human potential movement, then moving more into traditional psychology in the 80s, in my own case. And I would say mid-70s, I began to realize that there was a kind of missing piece in most conventional psychology and transformation, New Age, human potential, which is that we were good. I was a teacher at a young age. You know, I was leading workshops and so forth, and I was in trainings or teachings or retreats or situations of various kinds. I began to realize that people, including me, were good at helping others or themselves have beneficial experiences. In other words, a moment of insight or a feeling in the body or an opening in the heart. We were good at that part, but we really kind of sucked at helping those experiences sink in so they would have lasting value. And there were just so many situations where people would, like, you know, myself included, read a paragraph in an inspirational book or, you know, be in therapy and have some opening or talk with a friend and realize something or, to, you know, go to a transformational workshop and, oh my goodness, it's amazing. You know, Sunday night it's amazing, but by Wednesday morning it's kind of, you know, same old, right?
Yes.
Why didn't these powerful experiences, insights, sensations in the body, emotions, new motivations, things like that, why didn't they have more lasting effect? And I began to realize that we just weren't changing the brain. And the brain changes in a two-stage process. And stage one is important. Okay, you need to help the nervous system have an experience. All right. But if you don't do the second step of installation or encoding, or you don't get lasting change. And so I became a great student, informally and formally, of what it actually takes to maximize the lasting value of everyday experiences, beneficial experiences, including inner spiritual practice or our self-actualization or our personal healing. And that's what I ended up teaching people a lot about over the years. And then I eventually ended up writing a lot about it in both Buddha's Brain, and then I totally focused on this practice in Hardwiring Happiness.
Yes, you did. I loved your book. I've been reading the last week, and I like it because it is so specific. And I think what you're talking about is that we have these general experiences and this general knowledge of how to be happier, but then we don't know how to hold on to it. So I guess what we're really talking about is how to change the brain. And I know that we've talked about this before on the other show, but in terms of this negativity bias, it might help to explain to listeners who didn't read Buddha's Brain why we have this negativity bias, and what do we do to change it?
Yeah. Well, so let me kind of frame it a little bit first.
Sure.
You know, it's interesting that in human potential, psychology, you know, New Age, it's just general territory, right? Transformation, personal growth, which I think of as a very normal process of just becoming more capable, you know, just kind of very familiar, right? It's sort of old school.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of talk about being embodied, right? Coming into the body. Mm-hmm. And yet a lot of people, I think, don't really honor the implications of that, of really being an embodied soul, as it were. So as an embodied being, if you are hearing something or seeing something, or if you are learning, like a child learning to walk or an adult learning how to stabilize attention in their meditation, or learning how to be more assertive and to feel more entitled to really get your own needs yet, let's say as a woman in a family or in life in general, or to feel that, to have more sense of inner peace, you know, to acquire this over time, that process is embodied. It involves bodily changes. I mean, I personally think there are transcendental X factors, the divine, you know, so forth. But other than what those may be, we're left with natural processes of that are embodied, right, that are in the physical universe, which includes, of course, wild stuff like quantum effects and E equals MC squared and so forth. Okay. Inside that frame, then, the question is, how does your brain and nervous system and embedded in your body, how does it grow, right? Or how does it become traumatized or become increasingly anxious or irritable or feel really frazzled and stressed? What happens there? Well, there's got to be change in your nervous system. And the problem is, now going to the negativity bias, we have a nervous system that's really good at changing for the worse. In other words, it's really good at overlearning from negative experiences. Once burned, twice shy. Never forget. But it's relatively bad at learning from positive experiences, beneficial experiences, turning those into lasting changes in your body. Because as our ancestors evolved, it was incredibly important to learn from pain, to learn from threats. You know, if you manage to get away from that charging saber-toothed tiger, you better remember forever what were the clues that that tiger was sneaking up on you or mm-hmm. your little babies, right?
Yep.
But on the other hand, if you'd failed to get a banana today, you'll probably have a chance at a banana tomorrow. So the brain has this negativity bias. Makes it like Velcro for the bad, but Teflon for the good. And everybody knows what this is like. You know, you're, I don't know what, you know, you hang out with a friend and it feels really good. And, you know, your friend tells you 20 things about yourself. And one of them is that, oh, you look like you've gained a little weight, right? That's the one negative thing your friend says. What do you obsess about for the next day, right? Or, you know, there you are in an interaction with somebody. And, you know, maybe your loved one, your mate, your partner, whatever, you know, 10 things happen in a day with that person. 9 of them are positive. One was that little eye roll they gave you or that word they used, you know, to describe you that really stuck in your craw. That's the one we think about. And there's a lot of research that shows that we're very, very affected by the negative and not so affected by the positive, even though the problem is being affected by the positive, if you think about it, is how to actually transform yourself and heal and self-actualize and grow and become more capable and more confident, more skillful, and happier over time. So it basically my book's about, what I'm about, in is helping people learn how to really harvest the value of daily experiences that are ordinary. You know, the little moments of daily life where you accomplish something, or right now we're having I'm certainly having, I think you are too, like a nice feeling of a back and forth here. Or maybe you worried about something that didn't happen. Or maybe you can notice that actually flowers are blooming. I'm looking out my own window and seeing the spring flowers here in the northern hemisphere of California, you know, blooming in my backyard. Each one of these, you know, half a dozen times a day, is an opportunity to really take a dozen seconds or so to open to and receive the gifts and help them really land inside yourself so they sink in and plant seeds and take root, as it were, in the garden of your own mind. You know, using that metaphor to finish, we've got a, if the mind-brain system is like a garden, it's really fertile for weeds. Boy, is that soil super fertile for weeds, but it's like stony ground for flowers. That's why we need to protect the flowers or protect the seeds of the flowers in everyday experiences to stay with the experience, open to it in the body, and really help it sink in.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And of course, as you're speaking, I'm having like 50 flashes of things that where I have focused on the negative or I have been able to focus on the positive. So I'd love to jump to your acronym HEAL because I think that that would help people. I like how you anchored it. I love acronyms anyway. I could make them up all day. So go with HEAL and tell us like how we more specifically change the brain.
Oh, sure. Definitely. So there's been, you know, tens of thousands of studies on how the nervous system changes. In other words, what's the underlying embodied basis for either changing for the worse, you know, getting more fearful, depressed, traumatized, etc., or changing for the better, becoming more grateful, more compassionate, more resilient, more determined, more loving, happier, and so on. Okay. What those studies boil down to really boil it down, I'm a practical guy, is that it's a two-stage process. Basically, an experience is held in what are called short-term memory buffers. Imagine that as like a little cup. And then what they need to do, though, for there to be any kind of lasting value, is that the experience that's held in that short-term memory buffer, like a moment of gratitude, say, or a moment of feeling loved, that experience has to sift down into, it has to kind of drip down into, out of the cup, into the deep basin of long-term storage that is the nervous system, right? See the two-stage process? And a fancy terms for this would be we need to move from a momentary state, like an experience of gratitude or feeling loved, to a lasting trait in which we feel inside ourselves a deep, unconditional reservoir, let's say, of gratitude or feeling cared about, all right? Or we need to move to say the same thing a little differently, from activation to installation. That's the two-stage process. So I summarize that two-stage process in a really easy acronym, HEAL, which means first, H for have. We need to have a beneficial experience in the first place, usually because right. we notice we're already having one. Oh, I'm enjoying looking at the flowers, or, oh, I feel good, I got the dishes done, or, oh, what a relief, I finally buckled that squirming toddler into the car seat. Thank goodness, right? Okay, we're having an experience, or maybe we deliberately create it. We say to ourselves, I'm going to listen to Dr. Susan Allison, you know, and I'm going to get some value here, and I'm going to get some new perspectives, and I'm going to feel better, or maybe I'm going to meditate or pray, or I'm going to walk the dog, and I'm going to focus on the feeling in my body as I just move along, and I'm going to do a mindfulness practice here, whatever it might be. We deliberately create, or maybe I'm going to call on some sense of determination and strength because I got to deal with this jerk at work, you know, jerk at work, yep. and so forth. Whatever it is,
very
we
good.
Create. Either way, whether you notice the beneficial experience you're already having or
yes.
you deliberately create it, you got it going. You have it. Okay, good. That's yep. H for have. And then if yep. you want to move into installation, if you want to help it sink in, you need to do two things. Enrich it, E for enrich. So very simply, inside yourself, you stay with it 5, 10, 20 seconds in a row. You open to it in your body. You, if you like, help it become more intense. You go, wow, I'm so grateful here. Or, oh, I'm feeling so strong to deal with that jerk at work. Okay, you enrich the experience. You know, there's a famous mm-hmm. saying, you know it, neurons that fire together, wire together. And mm-hmm. so the more neurons you get firing, the more you're going to get wiring. In other words, you're going to create lasting change, lasting value, inside out, right? Or mm-hmm. the more intensely those neurons fire, or the longer they fire, the more you're going to get that wiring of lasting value from this experience. That's E for enriching.
Yeah, so
and then A stands for absorb in the HEAL
well,
process.
Rick, let me stop you just for a second because I have a question about the enriching process. Because you say 10 seconds. And I think it helps people to know how long, because we live in a society, as you know, right now, especially that everything is so fast and we're zipping by things and we're not taking in the good. We're not taking much in except, you know, zooming to work and you're getting, you know, deadlines and so forth. And I just, you know, you said 10 seconds and I actually counted that out for myself this morning and it seemed really long when I was focusing on, you know, something outside my window. We're not used to stopping. And to me, that stage is the trickiest for me.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing this up. So the way I see it myself is, you know, 5, 10, 20 seconds. And then I give people a real technical term. Ready? Mobetta. What I mean by that is more better. In other words, mobetta. More episodes over a day in which you just slow it down a little bit to register the experience, to let it land. And often it only takes a few seconds. Now, that said, part of Mobetta is, in addition to more episodes of positive learning, positive growth or change, more depth of engagement in episodes. In other words, more slowing down to receive the gift, to stay with it. And so there's no hard and fast rule. It's like Mobetta. In other words, neurons that fire together, wire together. The more you get it going, the more often you do it, the longer you do it, the better. All that said, you're right. Isn't it amazing how hard it is to actually sustain an enjoyable experience for 10 seconds in a row, which is roughly the duration of maybe 2 breaths? Isn't that interesting? And it's
isn't
sad.
It so weird? It's very sad. It was to me this morning. I was like, I was kind of like not anxious exactly, but I was like waiting for it to be over, which is ridiculous because it's boosting my pleasure and my happiness. But I realized how I am not used to stopping and really taking it in. So that's going to be the stage that I need to, you know, to really sink into and do it, you know, not be have a fast, hard rule, like you said. But that has been the part that I notice that I don't know if I'm resisting or I'm just not used to it.
I think you're talking about our culture a lot. You know, we're so used to being stimulated continually. You know, if no one has ADHD, you know, in a video arcade, you know, game parlor, whatever, you know. But we need to honestly slow down. I think that's where there's a lot of wisdom in traditional cultures that live more at the pace of a walk, you know, in rhythm with the seasons and so forth. And it's poignant, I think. There's a metaphor in Tibetan Buddhism, it's a hell realm, the land of the hungry goats. And you may know it. It's this metaphor that these are godlike beings in a hell realm who have enormous powers and enormous appetites, symbolized by a gigantic belly, but their capacity to satisfy their appetites is represented by a pinhole for a mouth. And does that sound like, frankly, many, many people in the Western developed countries of the world, especially, frankly, America, caught up in consumerism, chasing one experience after another, you know, channel changing, channel surfing all day long, flipping from one, you know, website to another, and yet not slowing down enough, given these appetites, to satisfy them, to actually appreciate that, especially in terms of internalizing emotion. Not just internalizing a new idea or seeing a new pretty picture, but to actually feeling something emotionally or in the body in terms of sensation. The memory systems that are involved in that are ancient. They're like a dog or a cat or a monkey. You got to slow it down to really help it sink in. So I just find it so poignant, actually. And I honestly, I see it with a lot of people, you know, both men and women have different spins on this, but I see so many women, frankly, giving, arranging so many wonderful things for so many other people, and not slowing down themselves to take in for themselves. You know, it's as if they prepare. They sit down at the banquet of life, and then they bring a toothpick to eat with. And I say, no, you deserve a big spoon.
I agree. And we're going to need to take a break. Rick, this is so fascinating. I love it. We're going to bring back our giant spoons and really be savoring happiness in life when we come back. And so, listeners, we will be right back.
Haven't seen you since high school. Good to see you're still.
Hi, I'm Leslie Fontaine with Sheer Alchemy on Transformation Talk Radio, and here's your tip of the week. When we own our own responsibility, we're choosing to own our choices, our energy, our day, our jobs, our relationships. It's a tall order. And what difference does that make? Well, plenty. We're choosing to look within, to change agreements within ourselves, to keep our energy field clean, and to upgrade as needed to make choices that are authentic to us. This shifts our language. We no longer blame others. We're no longer victims of our circumstances. So if we don't get paid abundantly or loved abundantly, let's look within and ask, where am I not honoring myself? Where am I not loving myself? Let's change the agreement. Let's get real with what's in place, forgive ourselves and others, and shift into our new life. Visit me at LeslieFontaine.com or call me at 678-665-3366. Let this be the last day that you choose to look outwardly and look within.
Be a leader as a way of life. Reclaim leadership over your domain with Ascended Master Moses. Meditation workshop led by Wendy R. Wolf and Lynn Brown. Friday, January 30th at the Key Center Building in Bellevue. Live out your unique and significant role in this lifetime for the betterment of your soul as well as the universe as a whole. Come practice opening to your inner voice. Be the difference only you can make in your world. To register, go to healgrowshine.com or email wendy@wendyrwolf.com.
Are you feeling stressed, in pain, disconnected, worried about aging? Corrective Alignment and Integration Therapy restores health. Move your body, which frees your mind and elevates your spirit. Bodywise Bodywork LLC provides the tools you need to create the change you've been waiting for. Start living a fully present and integrated life. book your 15-minute consultation online at www.bodywisebodywork.com. Bodywise Bodywork, LLC, because it's the only body you've got.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you are ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
Good to know that you got free. That town I know is keeping you down on your knees.
These bruises make for better conversation. Loses the bond that separates.
Welcome back, everyone, to We Carry the Light. This is Dr. Susan, and I have an incredible guest, Rick Hansen, and his latest book is Hardwiring Happiness. And Rick, I'd like you to tell people how to get your book, how to be in contact with you, and tell them about this great new program that you're developing.
Well, thank you. And well, super briefly, my website is rickhansen.net. It's chock full of freely offered resources. And people can learn more about me there and check out, you know, the freely offered talks, articles, videos, interviews, fun things to do, things like that. Additionally, the book itself, of course, is available everywhere. It was a New York Times bestseller, which I'm happy about, Hardwiring Happiness. And the other thing I just want to mention is that I've been doing this online experiential course called The Foundations of Well-Being, and anybody can access it. Basically, it's a transformational process, chock full of amazing resources. It's quite inexpensive, and it's grounded in the science of positive neuroplasticity. You use the guided practices I teach, as well as interviews with superstars like Tara Brach, Jack Kornfield, people like that, and also neat quizzes and self-assessment tools and things and so forth, and lots of specific resources that are aimed at particular issues like relationships or eating or spirituality or recovery, things like that. And what you do is you grow what I call the 12 pillars of well-being inside your own brain, like mindfulness or gratitude or motivation or aspiration or courage. So that's what that program's about, and you can check it out. You can sign up for it at any time. You take it at your own pace. You download the content in it. You have it forever. So, and if you're also a therapist, I should add, or a coach, you can get continuing education credits for the course. So that's what it is. It's
wonderful.
Called The Foundations of Well-Being, and you can find out about it on my website.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you shared that. I just find it so refreshing that you're a scientist and you're a meditation teacher. And I think that the combination is incredible. And wanted to say that it feels to me, because sometimes I've known a lot of scientists in my life, and they don't have that other perspective that you have. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that in you, Rick.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. And you know, if you think of the root meaning of the word science, in, I guess, Latin or something, it's about deep knowing. And I also think of the root word for Budo, or Buddha nature,
yes.
Bodhicitta, Bodhi. It means, you know, one who knows, deep understanding. And for me, they're very, very similar. You know, it's about penetrating to the essence of the matter, you know, seeing into the heart, you know, what matters most, what are the deep causes. And I love the integration of the two.
I do too.
Yeah,
I do too.
For me, it's not reductionist. You know, it's not reductionistic to appreciate the extraordinary nature of the physical universe. The more people learn about it, the more astonishing it is. right?
Mm-hmm. And that's right. That's
not
right.
Not inconsistent, in my view.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, definitely not inconsistent with the transcendental
view. It's not, but it's. I don't always meet people who have integrated the two as you have, and I'm trying to do it and have for a long time in my life. I mean, I absolutely love quantum physics, and I'm also an energy healer, and so I use it a great deal in my therapy practice, and I can explain to people who don't have a spiritual practice per se, I can explain what I'm doing through quantum physics. And so I love the mix. And so I think that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Well, thank you.
Great. Yeah. So we left off, those of you who have been listening, we left off talking about an acronym, which is HEAL. We talked about you have to have an experience that's positive, and then you enrich it by taking some time with it. And I think we left off with the letter A.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So A just stands for absorb in the H-E-A-L HEAL process. And then essentially it means that you move into a receptive intimacy with your own experience. You know, it's a receiving, an opening to it in the body, a letting it land. And what you're also doing neurologically is that you are priming and sensitizing the memory-making systems. You're basically saying, okay, I want to give myself over to, let's say, this experience of feeling cared about or feeling morally entitled to getting my own needs met in this crazy family, including other people doing some dishes around here. You know, whatever that might be, you are, you know, you're giving yourself over to it. You're budging around it. You know, there's a traditional saying that the mind takes its shape from what it rests upon over time. And in effect, you're trying to help yourself, in a way, rest upon and become shaped by whatever this beneficial experience is. So that's the essence of changing your brain for the better a handful of times a day, maybe even a dozen, you know, in a big day. But each time you do it, it's less than 30 seconds. So it's about 5 minutes a day of practice that I'm talking about. But it's what will make your actual learning or growth or transformation or change or healing over the course of the day significant rather than, honestly, flat in terms of your learning curve for the day. And then if you want, the optional L step in the HEAL process, H-E-A-L, stands for link. Mm-hmm. And what you do when you link is that you are being aware of both something positive and something negative at the same time. You're making the positive bigger in your mind, more prominent in the foreground of awareness, with the negative off to the side. But because neurons that fire together wire together, if you are aware of two things at once, positive and negative, but the positive is bigger, it will gradually wire to and associate to the negative, mm-hmm. and therefore gradually soothe, ease, contextualize it, and eventually, potentially, replace it. It's a little bit like, let's say, in my example, I was feeling cared about or back in college or certainly in my adulthood in general. I might sneeze in a moment here. Be careful. Okay. There we go. I love to sneeze.
Bless you.
But anyway.
Bless you.
Yeah, thank you. I'll take it. Anyway, there you are. There I was, feeling cared about. And off to the side sometimes, I would have the sense of being not so cared about. Maybe when I was younger, or maybe even in the present time. And there would be a sense of feeling cared about going into that old pain of not being cared about, feeling excluded, unwanted, and so forth. So feeling cared about going into it, easing it, helping it, soothing it, like a soothing balm sinking down into places inside that have felt bruised. Okay? So that's it. Yeah. That's the HEAL process, H-E-A-L. There are a lot of details about this, including looking for those experiences that are going to have the most beneficial impact. And that's your vitamin C, I call it, that you really look mm-hmm. for. But the essence is very simple. You know, look for those beneficial experiences. Slow it down, as you, Susan, point out, to receive them. So have them. And then enrich the experience 5, 10, 20 seconds in a row. Stay with it. Feel it. Let it, you know, keep that song playing in your mind so it can get recorded into your inner iPod. And then, you know, you can absorb the experience, open to it like a sponge receiving water into yourself or like light coming down into you. And then if you want, occasionally you can even do the linking step of sensing that this beautiful, positive, beneficial experience is contacting places inside that have felt hurt or maybe didn't get enough of the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a concrete example that listeners can probably relate to, which is my husband passed away a year and a half ago, and I am surrounded here with all of the things that we did together and this beautiful arbor that he built that has kiwis that are going to be growing into these wonderful fruits and, you know, roses that we planted. And, you know, everywhere I look, there's a memory that is really incredible and beautiful and is linked to something that happened that is heartbreaking as well. So can you talk about how we sustain the good when there's been something that is heartbreaking, that's incredibly, you know, like the most difficult experience of my life? And the same with listeners who, you know, who have had, as your friend in the book did, had someone leave and they had a breakup, or you know, they've lost their job. Their house has been foreclosed on. So some of these really difficult experiences, how do we hold the good?
Yeah, deeply important question. So to be clear here, what I'm really talking about is, in many ways, the essence of self-reliance. In other words, it's not some superficial Hallmark card-ish kind of practice of, you know, look on the bright side, or just do positive thinking. I don't believe in positive thinking. I believe in realistic thinking. And what I'm talking here about is the fundamental process of growing resources inside yourself to bear the difficult things or to cope with what's hard, as well as to have things inside ourselves that we can offer to others to help make the world a better place. So that's the context. And inside that context, I think, you know, Susan, that there are basically three ways to practice, to engage the mind. In the first way, we just be with our experience. We be with what's there. You know, we be with the grief, the mourning, the loss, let's say, or the feeling, the shock in the moment that someone you thought was your friend has actually let you down, or even worse, really betrayed you. You know, you be with it. You feel it. You bear the pain. Hope you experience the experience, feel the feelings. Maybe you investigate it mindfully. You sense down perhaps into what's younger and maybe more vulnerable under the surface, but you're not trying to change it, okay?
No.
The second main way to practice, though, is to release the negative, to release tension out of the body, to cry, to weep, to wail, to scream, to vent perhaps, or to abandon unwholesome desires like to, you know, get hammered to get through the difficult moment, you know, with drugs or alcohol, have 10 cookies or something like that. Or we let go of inappropriate thoughts or thoughts that don't help us, like thoughts that it's all our fault that our partner's an alcoholic, things like that. So we let go, we release. And then in the third great way to practice, we receive, we take, we grow the good. Open to positive experiences, we grow resources inside. To use a metaphor, if the mind is a garden, like I said previously, three great ways to practice are to witness the garden or pull weeds or plant flowers. In other words, let be, let go, let in. So if a person has had a terrible loss, you know, their home has been foreclosed, they've lost a loved one, or maybe something, you know, smaller, like they find themselves really worrying about something, you know, start with letting be. Stay with it. Open to it.
Yeah.
And that alone can often be transformational. Often,
Absolutely.
Though, it's not enough. And then we need to move into what the Buddha called wise effort, where we both release the negative and then replace it eventually with something positive. So my focus with you about how to grow the positive, how to grow the good, how to take in the good, is in this larger context. You know, I'm interested in how to grow flowers in the garden of the mind for various reasons, including the fact that I think that's been the area of psychology and even in transformation that's been underexplored. There's been a lot of focus on bare witnessing, just being with experience, and there's a lot of focus on letting go, but there hasn't, I think, been enough focus on letting in, you know, growing the good inside yourself. But it's in the context of acknowledging the other, you know, two great ways to practice. In the moment, there's often a kind of natural step-by-step trajectory where you start with just being with the pain. You feel it fully, you open to it, and then it feels like there's an appropriate moment where, okay, it's time to move on. Maybe because I can't bear it any longer, or it's time to change the channel. You know, yep. I know this negative thought pattern. I'm familiar with it. I see it. I get it. Okay. I recognize the voice of my stepfather in my head. You know, I know that voice by now. It's time to move on. And then you move into letting go, you know, and then at a certain point, it feels right to let in something positive to replace the negative that you've released. And knowing where you are in that trajectory is helpful, and also knowing what your strengths are. Like for me as a guy, frankly, I was very good at Mr. Fix-It in my own mind, you know. I was good at the second and third ways to, you know, to practice, letting go and letting in. I had to learn to let be. I had to really learn to stay with my feelings, open to my pain, you know, just honor my own experience and stay with it. On the other hand, I know a lot of people, especially in the spiritual world, who are kind of stuck in the first way of, you know, being with the mind. And neurons that fire together wire together. If you're just stuck in the pain, identified with it, you're reinforcing it, you know? And we've got a brain, because of its negativity bias, that's really good at sucking that pain, you know, in the lasting memory systems. I think pain is overrated. Mm-hmm. A little bit of that goes a long way.
I agree with you completely. And it's interesting what we were talking about the American culture earlier. You know, I think that it's so applicable here, because many of my clients don't want to feel it. And so they're, you know, they're using food, or they're using alcohol, or you know, well, basically in our culture, using work. You know, it's that, you know, we have, I have a friend that who's a very, very famous biologist, and she knows she's a workaholic. And right, so she went to a Workaholics Anonymous meeting, and there was no one else there.
That's funny.
We laughed for so long about that, but I feel like in our culture that people aren't always feeling it. They aren't staying in the pain, because our culture gives the message that, you know, pain is bad, that having feelings is bad. So you want to get out of them quickly. You want to, you know, you want to take an Advil. So I'm also seeing people that try to escape that first stage.
I think that's really good way to point it out. You know, the brain doesn't change quickly. It needs nudging. And, you know, I think people, you know, have overvalued passive, receptive, bear witnessing in the field of psychology, and also in, especially in the more spiritual, transformational, you know, new age space. And I think bear witnessing is the most fundamental practice, because it's your last resort. Right. Sometimes you just can't release the negative, nor can you grow the positive, but you can always ride out the storm. And I think also as people practice more and more, and they increasingly internalize the fruits of their practice of, you know, pulling the weeds and planting flowers in the garden of their mind, more and more they move toward a kind of just being with, bear witnessing, choiceless awareness mode of practicing. I mean, that has been my own journey, certainly, in my own, you know, 40, 50-year journey of practice. But on the other hand, if we don't also engage wise effort, if we don't cultivate the wholesome, if we don't cultivate loving kindness and compassion and mindfulness and resilience and determination and feeling worth and feeling worthy of love and feeling lovable and feeling deserving of decent treatment by other people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If we don't cultivate those things, they don't just naturally sprout up in the brain. You know what I mean? We got to. It's like gardening.
Right.
You got to, you know, if you don't plant the flowers, they don't grow. And let's not forget, weeds come back if you don't replace them with flowers. You know, people might go through the releasing phase of letting go of the negative, but if you don't replace the negative you've released with something positive, you know, those weeds will come back.
Really true. I'm glad that you're mentioning love and compassion and those other qualities. I really liked the last part of your book when you talk about the 21 jewels. And I'm even thinking of doing the 21 days that you talk about there. of doing this practice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can you talk about that last part of your book
How
inspiring it is, inspire people?
Yeah. Well, the structure of it is kind of important to recognize because it makes it really profound. And the idea there is that, as animals, like other animals, we have three major needs for safety, satisfaction, and connection. And I think there are certain key needs, especially spiritual needs, that don't neatly fit into the structure. But it's a classic way of thinking about beings. And it relates loosely to the reptile, mammal, and primate-human stages of evolution of the brain in terms of safety, satisfaction, and connection that are managed by avoiding harms for safety, approaching rewards for satisfaction, and attaching to others for connection. So that gives us a nice little roadmap and structure for identifying what a person's needs are and where their key resource experiences are, their vitamin C's, I called them earlier, that will help them most. Okay? So what I've done in the 21 jewels, we have 7 jewels per need, safety, satisfaction, and connection. And the aim of it is to help people move out of fear to peace in terms of the safety mm-hmm. need, to move out of frustration right. to contentment for the satisfaction need, and to move out of what I call heartache to love for the connection need. And so one way to do the 21 jewels is just each day there's a new focus. So maybe in the safety system, one of the very first things to focus on is the feeling of being on your own side, you know, being for yourself, that you're a friend to yourself. Or maybe what there is to do is to focus on relaxation for safety. And so that becomes your focus for the day. And every, you know, little mm-hmm. opportunity you have to have that experience, then you move into enriching and absorbing it. And if you want, linking it to some old issue or old pain. And that's the practice for that day. So it's really quite profound. If people do that,
yep.
you know, I can tell you, honestly, that if somebody were to do that practice and give it at least a few minutes a day, 21 days in a row, and then if they don't feel markedly better, I'll refund the cost of the book. You know what I mean? Like, I'm so confident in that guarantee.
I was afraid you were going to say you were going to tear out the pages and eat them. So at least
No. Because I'm a friend
not
of myself.
What
I wouldn't want to set myself up for that, you know. I think someone would, you know, who knows what someone would do just to see that happen. But anyway, yeah.
Just teasing.
Yeah, yeah. And I know we're moving to the end, so I want to make this point here if I can.
Yes, we are.
It's what I call the law of little things. You know, usually it's lots of little things that take us to a bad place, and it's going to be lots of little good ones that take us to a better one. And that's why I think this idea of 21 jewels or the things we've talked about, Mobetta, are so powerful and hopeful for people. You don't have to, you know, in my approach, you don't have to, you know, do like a 21-day meditation retreat, although I've done them. They're amazing.
Yep.
I'm really talking here about a few minutes a day, but day after day after day. You know, there's this teaching from the Buddha. He says, think not lightly of good, saying, it will not come to me. Drop by drop is the water pot filled. Likewise, the wise one, gathering it little by little, fills oneself with good.
Beautiful. I love that.
And I think that's the essence of what I'm trying to talk about here.
I love that. Thank you so much, Rick, for being on the show today. It's been my pleasure to have you again and to help all of us be able to take in the good.
Yeah. I think it's great. And that's what we need to do in the world at large. You know, if people feel more filled up from the inside out, they're a lot harder to manipulate with fear or greed or tribalism. And those three poisons are what are driving the world to the brink these days.
That's right. So thank you so much for being on the show. I may have you back to talk about this new program you're developing. So
thank you.
Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.
I'd like to also thank everyone who makes the show possible and all of you who helped change the time and the the radio station, and Benny, I want to thank all of you. I appreciate you so much. And all of my listeners, thank you for continuing to stretch and grow and even grow a new brain. So next week, we welcome Marie-Rose Fonlay, who's written a book called Talking Story, One Woman's Quest to Preserve Ancient Spiritual and Healing Traditions. Until then, this is Dr. Susan Allison reminding you that you carry the light.
You've been listening to the transformative show, We Carry the Light, with host Dr. Susan Allison, the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. Who are you right now, and who do you want to be? What is it that makes you happy, helps you feel fulfilled, and living your purpose? Tune in every Thursday, 10 a.m. Pacific, and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.